This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. There's plenty to adore about Michigan summers, but I'm betting that wasps are not at the top of many people's lists. And yet here they are every year, nesting in your eaves, hovering over your garden, dashing about in an erratic flight pattern that can intimidate the biggest bug lovers among us when we're having dinner outdoors. New research from our next guest might bolster your fear of the nefarious intentions of wasps, or they could just give you a lot more respect for a way these amazing creatures socialize. You know that thing you do when you find out that you and a coworker are in line for the same promotion? Turns out that's a thing with wasps, too. Elizabeth Tibbetts is a professor in the University of Michigan's Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and she joins us now. Liz, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks so much for having me.
What did you notice about the behavior of wasps that led you to this research?
Well, the first thing I noticed is that they all have really different faces. So, you know, you look at a couple squirrels, they look pretty much identical. But if you look at a bunch of wasps of the same species, they all look unique.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I wondered why. Why do they all have different faces? So I did some experiments and showed that they have individual face recognition.
What kinds of features tend to vary on a wasp's head?
Yeah, so they have different brown, black, and yellow marks. They've got little eyebrow stripes. They have different patterns around their mouth. You have to get pretty close to see them. So I understand most people probably have not seen them, but they do look really different when you get a good look.
For this research that you published recently, you collected female paper wasps from sites around Ann Arbor in early spring. Could you tell us, first off, how paper wasp colonies are structured?
Yeah, so I'm sure everyone has seen them. They like nesting on the eaves of houses or in your barbecue grill, underneath your porch railing. And it starts out with one queen who's overwintered. She comes out in the spring, flies around, finds a good place to nest. And then she starts building. It looks kind of like an open honeycomb made out of paper.
And I know that you said that there's a queen. Are they structured in the same way that honeybee colonies are structured, where the queen basically directs everything that's going on with the other members of the colony?
Yeah, so the paper wasp world is very different from the honeybee world. So with the honeybee, you've got one queen, you got a bunch of workers, and all the workers are like cells kind of working for the colony. They don't care about their own life. They're just there for the good of the group. But in paper wasps, everyone is very selfish. So you often have a bunch of queens cooperating with each other. And they are cooperative, but they're also looking out for themselves. They try to get as much as they can. They compete with each other over how much they get. And then if they don't get a good enough deal, they leave and try to find a better deal somewhere else. So that makes them exciting to study because they have so many different interactions going on.
The wasps that you collected were marked. The people on your team used enamel to mark their thoraxes so that you could tell them apart with different color patterns. I was wondering who the lucky devil was who got that job.
So actually, I think for this project, it was a bunch of undergraduates at U of M.
Of course it was.
Yeah. It sounds hard, but it's actually not. You know, you just wear these gloves they can't sting through. And paper wasps are not as aggressive as you would think. I studied them for about 10 years before I got my first sting.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So you took the wasps. There were pairs of fighter wasps that were placed two at a time in little containers, a sort of a Thunderdome fighting arena for wasps. And then there were bystander wasps that were able to observe through clear plastic partitions. And I understand that you could tell they were indeed watching. How could you tell that?
Well, we just watched, you know, what they were doing. And sometimes they ignored the fighters, but often they would, you know, turn and follow the fighters and watch what the fighters were doing. And you can tell when animals are watching each other.
What behaviors, like, how can you tell?
Yeah, how can you tell? That's a good question because it seems obvious when you're looking at it. I guess
it's not like a dog watching a squirrel.
Yeah, it's just like a dog watching a squirrel.
Oh, it is. Okay.
That's a great way to describe it.
Okay.
They just like put their little antenna out straight and they turn their head to watch. I mean, their eyes don't move, right? So they have to move their whole head when they're watching something. So that makes it a lot easier to see what they're watching.
Could you explain the next stage of the experiment and then what you did with the bystanders?
Yeah, so it's a little complicated, maybe not. So we had some fighters and then we had some watchers. And so what we did after those trials were done is we took some watchers and we paired them up with fighters. And we did two different kinds of trials. So sometimes we had an observer interact with a fighter who she'd seen fight. So like, let's say she saw Susie fight. We'd pair her up with Susie and then see how she treated Susie. Other wasps, we took them and we paired them up with a wasp they'd never seen before. And then we wanted to know, did they behave differently with Susie, who they'd seen, versus like Jolene, who they'd never seen before?
Well, what kind of decisions did you see the bystanders making?
Yeah, so it looked like the bystanders were really paying close attention, and they were making decisions about how to interact based on what they'd seen before. So if they saw Susie being a super badass, beating up the other wasp, when they actually got to interact with Susie, they basically instantly gave up and they said, okay, you're too tough. I'm not even going to try to fight with you.
Wow.
Yeah. So they really were paying attention. On the other hand, you know, you had controls where you had them interact with a fighter they'd never seen before. And of course, they didn't know anything about the fighter. So they just behaved like they didn't know anything.
Is this surprising in the world of invertebrates?
So it's not surprising to us as humans, maybe, because our entire social lives are built around watching each other interact. If you think about your life, you spend a lot of time paying attention to other people, figuring out who's strong, who's pretty, who's rich, and who's not. Uh-huh. But most animals don't do that. They just pay attention to who they interact with directly. If they fight with someone, they remember whether they won or they lost, but they don't spend time paying attention to all the other interactions around them, because it's thought to be pretty complicated. It makes your social life much more difficult if you're paying attention to the whole world, not just interactions that directly involve you.
So what was your takeaway about, I guess, wasp society out of all this that you didn't have before?
Well, I've been studying wasps for 20 years, which is a pretty long time. And usually I keep finding they can do these incredibly complicated things. And this is the one study I really did not expect to work. I really did not think that they were paying attention to these social interactions they weren't involved in directly. So I was thrilled. And it was a really exciting result for me to find that they do have these kind of complex social networks. So not only are they remembering individuals that they interact with directly, they're paying attention to this whole network of other interactions. And that's thought to be pretty complex. And in fact, in humans, people think that one of the reasons we have really big brains is so we can keep track of all those social interactions.
Turns out you can have a tiny brain like a wasp and do the same thing.
Exactly. Their brain is like the size of a grain of rice. How can they keep track? That's amazing.
Liz, do you think they watch other kinds of creatures, like maybe us humans?
So there's actually a study showing that bees can learn human faces if you train them. So I think it's theoretically possible, but I think they have enough going on in their little wasp world that they're not going to waste too much time worrying about you.
That is so amazing and at the same time totally creepy to me. The thought that they might be watching us.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I haven't gotten stung. If you watch them watching you, you get a lot of information.
So what further questions did these results open up for you?
Well, I guess I'm really interested in how smart wasps actually are and how much information they can learn and remember. Because being socially smart is thought to be one of the most complicated things and one of the main reasons things like primates or dolphins or humans have these giant brains. So I'm really interested in learning more about how much a tiny-brained little wasp can do.
Do you think they might be capable of a different level of problem solving than we gave them credit for?
Definitely. They could be capable of more complicated problem solving, doing things like transitive inference, which is like kind of making guesses about each other based on what they already know. I think what they could be capable of is living in these really complicated social networks where they know lots of individuals and they remember them for a long time and they know how everyone is placed, which doesn't actually sound that complicated when you say it, but for a tiny little wasp brain, it is.
Like the equivalent of a wasp Facebook in their understanding of their social circles.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of thinking about it. Most animals don't have that, believe it or not. They live in a really simple social world.
Well, Elizabeth Tibbetts, this is such interesting research. Thank you so much for sharing some of it with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Elizabeth Tibbetts is a professor in U of M's Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology.